Good morning and welcome to the Prescott Daily Courier. I'm Terry Ward. Today, reading from dcourier.com, an article dated from yesterday. That was Wednesday, the 12th of March. Well, coming up this half hour, we'll read about the annual march held in Prescott to salute International Women's Day. Also, a Republican state senator has submitted a proposal in the legislature to boost lawmakers' salary by double. And the Salvation Army of Prescott winter warm-up to remain open through March 31st. Those stories coming up. We'll start with this story, with the headline, New Public Safety Pension Policy will put surplus funds from the Prescott Police and Fire toward paying down a pension debt. The story says, eyeing a goal of having the city's public safety pension 100% funded by June of next year, the Prescott City Council approved a new policy last week that will put surplus money from the police and fire department budgets toward paying down unfunded pension liabilities. In a unanimous vote this week, the City Council approved an update to its pension funding policy for the coming year. New to the policy this year is a move to put any unencumbered general fund operating surpluses in the departments participating in the public safety personnel retirement safety system, which includes the Prescott Police and Fire Departments, and putting that money toward their trust accounts until they are fully funded. The idea for addressing the lingering debt in the pension funds initially was presented by Budget and Finance Director Mark Woodfill to the City Council during a study session last month. At that time, the council learned that after about 7 years of decreasing debt in the city's pension funds, thanks to a sales tax increase that Prescott voters approved in 2017, the Prescott Police Department's unfunded liability, that is, its pension debt, had increased by nearly $1 million this past year. As reported by the fund, the police department's unfunded liability grew from $673,000 to $1.6 million. The pension numbers indicate that the Prescott Fire pension is currently almost 98% funded. The Prescott police pension is at about a similar number, and the overall city pension is 97.9% funded. Between the two departments, the city has a $3.6 million unfunded liability. And while that is down significantly from the high of $86 million in unfunded liabilities in 2017, it is still above the $1.5 million range that was the goal of that sales tax initiative back in 2017. Noting that the City Council had earlier committed to getting the pension debt down to zero by June of next year, Woodfill, he's the finance guy, he suggested a policy change that would help the city deal with fluctuations. He recommended that any unused funds that remain in the police and fire department budgets at the end of a fiscal year be then put toward the unfunded liabilities. Council members appeared supportive of the policy change during the February meeting, and Woodfill then took the updated policy back to the council for a vote last week with wording intended to address ongoing shortfalls. And during the February discussion, Councilwoman Lois Frueworth had asked for a breakdown of the police and fire department's budgets in recent years, so to see how the policy would have affected the departments in those years. Woodfill provided information from the past three fiscal years, reporting that the police department had a $234,000 surplus in fiscal 21-22, while the fire department had a $214,000 surplus, with even higher numbers in more recent years. Woodfill said the surplus unencumbered funds have typically been carried over to the department's budget for the next fiscal year and are often used for one-time capital assets, such as the purchase or replacement of police cars. Frueworth also brought up the city's goal of having the pension funds 100% funded by June of 26, and asked Woodfill for his thoughts on whether that's going to happen. Woodfill responded, it's a goal, and I think we can achieve that goal. Councilwoman Kathy Rusing asked for an assurance that no money from the Proposition 478 Public Safety Sales Tax Initiative that voters approved in 2024, which goes into effect on April 1st of this year, would go toward paying down the pension liabilities. Woodfill noted that he had included wording in the policy stating, quote, "This does not include operational surpluses from the Public Safety Initiative, known as Prop 478. And while the city's overall pension debt decreased the past year from about $3.9 million to $3.6 million, Woodfill notes that continuing fluctuations should be expected, and the policy change was suggested to address the probable fluctuations. The overall drop in the city's pension debt was due to the fire department's decrease in unfunded liability, which Woodfill attributed in part to the $1 million that the state of Arizona contributes each year to the fire department pension fund to cover pension impacts from the Granite Mountain hotshot tragedy from 2013, during which 19 members of the city's hotshot crew died while fighting the Yarnell Hill fire. Woodfill told the council that the $1 million per year from the state was scheduled to run for 7 years, and the city has now received contributions for 6 of those years. He said the 7th and final $1 million contribution would occur in July. The city is required by the state to annually update its policy for dealing with liabilities in its pension fund. That headline, a new public safety pension policy will put surplus funds from the Prescott Police and Fire Departments toward paying down pension debt. Well, up next, Prescott Unified School District leaders opt against renewing an elementary principal's contract. The story says Prescott Unified District Avia Judd Elementary Principal, Rachel Chunglow's 3-year tenure as the school's education leader, will come to an end at the end of this school year. The move is described as a heartbreaking turn of events by the nationally recognized Avia Judd educator and mother of 4 students at that school. Faculty and parents were notified last week that district administrators opted against renewing Chunglow's contract for next school year. The letter sent to parents identified that district leaders have strived to work with Chunglow to improve her educational leadership. Given they have not seen the improvement they desired, district leaders said they are now moving in a new direction. It's been a really difficult decision, according to Tenney. In a letter to parents, Tenney and his administrative team said they have been working for many months to try to help implement positive changes at Avia Judd Elementary School. After significant effort and careful consideration, let's see, this is Tenney speaking. He says, "We've determined that it is time for new campus leadership at that school." Tenney was clear that the long, high-performing elementary school, earning a C state report card score earlier this year, rooted in state standardized test scores and student growth, was not the tipping point for the action not to renew her contract. For certain, he said, the decision for new leadership takes into account the district's desire to make sure all students are academically successful, but the district was working with Chunglow prior to the state's release of report card scores. A principal job is a really complicated, difficult job, said Tenney, noting principal changes in this district and elsewhere are not uncommon. At the staff meeting where the leadership change was announced, Tenney said there were faculty and staff who were clearly disappointed, as she is a terrific person who is beloved by many. He said he doesn't know anyone who doesn't have a great affection for the principal. Indeed, he said he would love to continue working with her in another capacity if she were to decide to do so. Yet, he said, he and the district administrative team believe this decision is a positive move going forward. The job is now posted, and a search committee made up of staff, parents, and will review applicants over the next few weeks. Tenney said they already have at least 6 candidates, one of them a Prescott Unified School District educator who intends to apply. Tenney said he expects to have a final selection by the end of April, and a new principal with a graduate degree will earn around $80,000. Someone with 11 or more years with such degrees could earn just over $97,000. A nationally recognized educator, Chung Glow, has long touted a belief in making school a learning community where students are expected to stretch their academic abilities and social skills through learning activities that are fun and engaging for their age groups. She is known for elaborate costumes that she uses to celebrate various holidays and school celebrations throughout the year. She regularly incorporates the school's the Jaguar logo, and she owns a lot of Abia Judd t-shirts into her apparel, be it leggings, earrings, or headbands. And Chung Glow started in the district as a student teacher back in 2011, then taught kindergarten for 6 years before she accepted the role as the district's remote learning director. And in 2019, Chung Glow was the first teacher in the district to earn the National Board Certification. In June of last year, Chung Glow was honored by the Arizona School Administrators as its Rookie Elementary Principal of the Year. Tenney nominated her for that distinction. So Chung Glow said, learning 2 weeks ago that she was to be replaced at the school she has poured so much love into since she was a student teacher there in 2011, was, in her words, a little bit whiplash. Aware that the school has endured some hard times, Chung Glow said she was still caught by surprise that this was the route that Tenney was going to go. She says, "We've made so much progress in growth, so I was shocked with the news." Chung Glow notes she struggled to keep her composure for the week until faculty and parents were alerted. Since all were notified, Chung Glow said she has received a lot of positive reinforcement. As for what's next, Chung Glow said her pledge is to finish the year with the same commitment she's had for the school since she started. He says, "I couldn't abandon my school. That's just not who I am." And she said she expects, though, her next education role will likely not be in the Prescott district. "This school," she says, "has been my whole heart. I have put my blood, sweat, and tears into this place." And she ends it by saying, "This school will always have a very special place in my heart." And as a side note, Abia Judd was the superintendent of the Prescott Unified School District, school named for him. He held that position for 22 years in the 1950s and 60s, retiring in 1973. Now that's who Abia Judd Elementary School is named for. Well, kind of a slow week in the Daily Courier this week, so we'll turn to the police blotter. This is the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office weekend roundup, and we're looking at a story about, looks like a tractor trailer rig burning kind of in the background of this photograph that comes with this story. So the camera is probably 100 feet from this burning vehicle. We see a firefighter in the foreground, and the tractor trailer fully engulfed in this nighttime photograph. And the headline is, "Fire engulfs a trailer storing nearly $400,000 worth of meat." Story says around 10 o'clock Saturday night, March 8th, Prescott Police and Fire, CAFMA, and Sheriff's Office from Yavapai County responded to a report of a semi-trailer on fire on Coyote Springs Road in Prescott Valley. Upon arrival, it was discovered the trailer was a trailer that was storing approximately $360,000 worth of refrigerated meat for a charity and a restaurant in Prescott Valley. Initial investigation did not reveal anything suspicious. The cause of the fire was unknown at the time, CAFMA investigating. Deputies responded to a possible... Oh, this is a different story. So that's the end of that story. And so we're in the police blotter here. The next one up here is multiple trespassing calls in Cordis Lakes. On Thursday, March 6th, before noon, deputies responded to a possible trespassing in Cordis Lakes. Deputies learned that a man was on a bike going into a residence that had been condemned. When deputies arrived, it was apparent the suspect was still inside. He came out and proceeded to give deputies a false name. It was quickly discovered who he was, at which point he was arrested on trespassing, false reporting to law enforcement, criminal damage to a patrol car, taking identity of another, and promoting prison contraband. He was detained in the back of the patrol car. The suspect is alleged to have caused damage to the inside liner of the door in an attempt to force it open. Then on Sunday, March 9th, at about 5:30 p.m., deputies responded to another report of someone else trespassing on the same condemned property in Cordis Lakes. When deputies arrived, it was apparent the suspected trespasser was still inside. After several attempts to call the person out, a female suspect eventually came out. Several items of drug paraphernalia were then discovered inside. The woman was arrested on having a valid warrant and possession of drug paraphernalia. The Yavapai County Sheriff's Office appreciates the public's help, it says, in cracking down on trespassing. And another story from the police blotter says deputies say driver threw a bag of meth out the window during a traffic stop. On Friday, March 7th, around 6:30 p.m., Sheriff's canine unit conducted a traffic stop with an officer there, too. No, it wasn't just the dog. In the lower Oak Creek part of Cornville, in which the car failed to pull over, the driver turned down a dead-end road where it eventually came to a stop. Deputies noticed the driver throw what was later found to be a bag of meth out the window. The driver was arrested for possession of dangerous drugs and unlawful flight from law enforcement. That's the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office Weekend Roundup. And you're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Sun Sounds has been providing information access since 1979. We invite you to live stream us at sunsounds.org. Well, up next, a sad story. Headline, Prescott Valley man dies in a horrific crash, leaving behind three children. We see a photograph of him with his three kids comes with this story. It's a selfie. He's holding the camera in the middle, and he's surrounded by his two daughters and one son. It's an outdoor photograph on a cloudy day. It looks like Thumb Butte area, but could be anywhere. Story says a Prescott Valley man and his girlfriend were killed in a fiery crash on Interstate 10 on March 1st, about 14 miles west of Tonopah. Tonopah is, I'm going to guess, about 30 or 40 miles west of downtown Phoenix, as if you were driving to Los Angeles. Dustin Clough and his girlfriend were driving in an RV that was part of a chain reaction that led to a 12-car pileup on I-10. That day, he was returning from a trip to California. The cause of the crash still unknown, but high winds and low visibility due to dust said to be a possible factor. His former wife said her parents happened to see the accident on the news and alerted her. They thought it was him, she said, from the truck that was in the accident because it looked like his, and had me call his mom. She had us meet at church to tell us all at once. A GoFundMe page has been organized to help the family, and I can give you that as well. Regarding the crash, the former wife said she she speculates that he didn't see the pileup probably until it was too late. His mom said he was likely gone on impact. They still don't really know what happened. Dustin and his girlfriend were near the back, it says, so I don't know. That's a quote from the former wife. Somehow, she added, his dog, Nacho, got out. We don't know how, she says. He was relatively unharmed. To say his family and friends are in shock and devastated is an understatement. Clough leaves behind three children, Jackson, who's 18, Addie, age 16, and Kenna, age 14. Plans made to spend time together will now never transpire. The former wife says, I think we're all in shock. Jackson, that's the 18-year-old son, was the hardest hit, she says. His dad was his hero, the person he aspired to be. The girls were supposed to go to dinner with him when he got back. They loved him so much. It's a lot of wishing they'd spent more time with him, going over how they could have done things differently in their relationships with him. She added, there's also the loss of the future that people don't seem to talk about. He'll miss the girls learning to drive, first dates, graduations, weddings, grandkids. Hard to think that he won't be there. He's going to be missed so much. Clough is being remembered as a person with a lot of friends and a very hard worker who owned two local businesses, landscaping and a premier carpet cleaning. He worked hard and was good at what he did, then played hard on the weekends, she says. And that headline, a Prescott Valley man dies in a horrific crash on I-10, leaving behind three children. Oh, and I said I would give out the GoFundMe page that has been set up to help the family. And that is GoFundMe.com/Dustin Clough. So GoFundMe.com/F/Dustin Clough. Well, up next, a Republican state lawmaker proposing inflation adjustments to lawmakers' pay, but making them retroactive. Senator John Kavanaugh says he simply wants to ask voters to ensure that what is being paid to lawmakers keeps pace with inflation. But the measure that the Fountain Hills Republican wants to put on the ballot for voters to decide would do more than create future inflationary adjustments to their current salary, which is $24,000 a year. That's because Kavanaugh crafted his bill to be retroactive to the last time voters approved a salary increase. That was 1998. And given the inflation that has occurred since then, voter approval of his plan would immediately turn that $24,000 annual salary for lawmakers into $48,000. Kavanaugh, however, said that increase is justified given the lack of any adjustments in what lawmakers earn over the past 27 years. That is what voters wanted us to have when they voted in 1998. More to the point, Kavanaugh said, it's now worth a lot less than that. He says, I don't think those voters wanted their $24,000 raise diluted by inflation to about $11,000, he said, based on his calculations of how the buying power of that 1998 figure has decreased due to inflation. What voters want, however, may be a bit more difficult to discern. Under the Constitution, the state Constitution, lawmakers cannot set their own salaries. Instead, the Commission on Salaries for Elective State Officers is supposed to meet on a biennial basis, and among its chores is to make recommendations for legislative salaries, recommendations that can be enacted only with voter approval. That's how the $15,000 salary paid to lawmakers until 1998 came to be $24,000. Voters did have a chance to boost it since then with commission recommendations to set the wages at various times between $30,000 and $36,000. All were rejected by voters, so the salary remains for state lawmakers $24,000 a year. And since then, former Governor Jan Brewer refused to name members to a panel for 4 years, saying it was inappropriate to consider pay hikes for elected officials during difficult times. She did finally make selections in time for the issue to be put on the 2014 ballot, though she openly opposed that proposal to boost pay to $35,000 a year. Kavanaugh says if the voters said inflation's okay for the minimum wage, he says, I don't think voters would be opposed to lawmakers' pay being tied to inflation as well. And the headline on that lengthy story, Republican Senator Kavanaugh proposing inflation adjustments to lawmakers' pay. Annual march held in Prescott to salute International Women's Day. The next headline here, the story comes with a photograph. We see the annual Women's March was held on March 8th. This looks like the downtown Prescott area to me, this photograph. Lots of people. There's hundreds of people experiencing this march. And the story says on March 8th, The annual Women's March was held in Prescott at the Yavapai County Courthouse Plaza in celebration of International Women's Day. The event was sponsored by the Democratic Women of the Prescott area and a few other groups. The event began at 1 p.m. with several speakers, music, and some entertainment. Participants had gathered on the north side of the courthouse and spilled over onto the grass areas. Once the speakers were finished, the participants marched around the courthouse plaza. The official count, according to organizers, was 900 to 1,000. They were carrying various signs in support of women's rights, voting rights, immigration, diversity, equity, and inclusion, among other topics. There were numerous signs and flags in support of Ukraine as well. The number of people there was so many that the front end of the marchers met the tail end of those who had yet to take to the sidewalks to participate in the march. It was a strong showing of unity, according to organizers. The event was peaceful, respectful exercise of First Amendment rights and the rights of people to peaceably assemble. Annual march held in Prescott to salute International Women's Day. And we'll close with Salvation Army of Prescott, a winter warm-up to remain open through March 31st. With colder than expected temperatures coming to Prescott this month, as well as freezing drizzle and some snow expected, the new leaders of the Salvation Army Corps in Prescott intend to ensure their winter warm-up emergency shelter remains open through the intended closing date of March 31st. When it seemed that the temperatures were warming up, Lieutenant Emily Reed said there was some talk of closing the shelter, but the forecast has altered those decisions. She said the plan now is to continue through their planned closing with some flexibility for any extra winter days into April. Since January, Reed said the shelter has operated at capacity with at least a couple of nights exceeding the 35 per night limit because of extreme outdoor temperatures. The annual cost for the program, about $65,000. And you've been listening to the Prescott Daily Courier, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. I'm Terry Ward. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.